Chapter 5, Part B. Criteria for choosing an intervention. Argyris recommended that three primary intervention tasks occur before making any type of intervention. First, recommended interventions must be based on valid information. This means thoroughly engaging phase one of the action research model by collecting and analyzing data on the problem before proceeding. Second, the client's discretion and autonomy must be respected. Engagement in the intervention must be based on the client's free, informed choice. And third, the client must be committed to learning and change. Credit 1970-2000. All three of these prerequisites had been met in the QuickCo vignette featured in Chapters 3 and 4, and were in place in the case of the Leadership Academy vignette, which positioned the organizations for intervention success. There is usually more than one appropriate intervention for every problem. Interventions vary in terms of their implementation timeframe, cost, scale, level, and complexity. For example, in the QuickCo vignette, the intervention involved a relatively short timeframe in which a facilitated intervention was made with the shipping department and some coaching was provided to the supervisor. The Leadership Academy vignette presents a much more costly, long-term, complex implementation that will last for a year and continue into the future. Cummings and Worley in 2018 defined an effective intervention as one that fits an organization's needs, targets outcomes that will address the problem's root cause, and transfers competence to the organization to manage future changes. A key feature of the Leadership Academy was to build internal capacity for the state public health agency to run future programs. French and Bell in 1999 advocated a strategic approach to interventions that incorporates goals, activities, and timing. The strategy also needs to anticipate the organization's readiness to change, potential barriers, and sources of support and leadership. French and Bell's tips for making effective interventions follow. Number 1, include the relevant stakeholders. Number 2, base the intervention on the data generated. Number 3, involve the stakeholders in the action research process. Number 4, keep the intervention focus on the key goal. Number 5, set manageable, attainable goals. Number 6, design the intervention so that key learning can be attained and shared. Number 7, emphasize collaborative learning throughout the process. And number 8, use the opportunity for the client group to enhance learning about the interpersonal workings of the group. Consider this. Use French and Bell's list to evaluate an intervention in which you participated. How did the intervention stack up against this list? Anderson in 2016 outlined useful considerations for making good intervention choices. First, the intervention should be congruent with the data and diagnosis from the discovery phase of the action research model. Incongruence will result in solving the wrong problem. Second, the client readiness for change should be assessed. Without a client that is willing and able to change, the intervention will fail. Striking a collaborative consulting relationship is foundational to promoting readiness throughout the process. Anderson's third consideration is determining where to intervene. Do you start with top management or line management? Do you work on relationships before issues or vice versa? Would it be wise to pilot the intervention on a small scale before rolling it out to the whole organization? Do you start with the easiest or most difficult aspect of the implementation? Anderson's fourth consideration is the depth of the intervention. Less deep interventions are observable, whereas very deep interventions are more abstract. The following are Anderson's depths, listed in order with some potential examples. Work content. Tasks, skills, knowledge. Overt group issues. Communication, decision-making, or conflict. Hidden group issues. Coalitions and power. Values and beliefs. Quality, cooperation, stability. And unconscious issues. Assumptions about how we do business and culture. Finally, Anderson's fifth consideration is to sequence activities to ensure optimal outcomes. Consultants need to make the best use of data, be highly effective, efficient, and quick, and use relevant activities that minimize stress on individuals and the organization. Section 5.3, Implementing OD Interventions. Now that the data has been analyzed and shared with the client and an intervention has been agreed upon, it is time to implement a solution. This is the action phase of OD. Implementation is the point of the consultation. Credit Block 1999, page 247. The moment of implementation or action is also the moment for the client to visibly take ownership of and lead the process. That is, the client will be accountable for maintaining the intervention in the future. If the client is not hands-on with implementation, the entire project will be at risk. If the consultant has managed the client relationship well and insisted on a joint process, the client should have little issue with taking charge of the intervention. The client will likely need ongoing coaching and support to help see the implementation through and build confidence in the process. Determining the consulting role. Consultants have a range of options for how to conduct themselves during the implementation. A consultant may elect to stay out of the way, take a hands-on approach, or serve as facilitator. As discussed in Chapter 3, the collaborative role is the most effective and generally preferred in OD. Table 5.6 in your ebook takes Cockman, Evans, and Reynolds' 1996 list of roles to collaboratively facilitate intervention implementation and offers some strategies for using these roles. Refer to Chapter 3 for more information about the consulting relationship and how to interact with clients throughout the action research process. Promoting learning related to the intervention. The intervention process moves the client from the current state through a transitional phase and into the new desired state. Another way to think of it is in terms of Lewin's unfreezing, moving, refreezing change model introduced in Chapter 2. People are engaged in the unfreezing stage when they become aware of the need to change, build the desire to create change, and undergo a process of unlearning. Imagine you decide to go on a diet. The unlearning is the process of recognizing that your current eating habits are unhealthy and searching for an alternative. Moving is making the changes, and this requires new learning. For example, you might consider several diet plans or review the basics of nutrition. Refreezing occurs when the new behavior becomes part of your lifestyle. Another way to think about this is to imagine a company decides to cut costs. The unlearning process involves recognizing areas where spending is unnecessary or too high. Moving or changing might involve reviewing expenditures and cutting extraneous purchases from the budget. Sometimes, travel budgets get cut in these circumstances, or the company switches to cheaper raw materials to make its products. A more extreme cost savings effort might be to lay off workers. Refreezing occurs when new spending behaviors and policies have been adopted and the company is able to sustain a lower cost threshold to operate. Human beings have always engaged in learning to survive, learning to live in a social group, learning to understand the meaning of our experiences. Credit Merriam and Bierema, 2014, page 44. Learning in the workplace is no exception and is a common focus of OD. Most change requires learning. People often are not aware of a problem until there is a crisis or they reflect on the results they are achieving. At that point, people begin to ask questions, such as, why are we doing it this way? Is there another way to think about this? What mistakes have we made and what have we learned from them? Or what could be improved? Asking such questions is what is known as reflective practice. Crisis or reflection can jolt people into a learning mode as they build knowledge and understanding. This learning is often the catalyst for change. People may learn the competition is gaining an edge, their quality is declining, their relationships are dysfunctional, or their management is lacking vision. These insights make them want to act, and OD provides a process for addressing these challenges through action research. Learning happens at every phase of the process, from discovery of the problem to planning an intervention to maintaining the change to evaluating its effectiveness. This section considers the role of learning in the action research process by appreciating the relationship between learning and change and exploring ways of facilitating client learning. the relationship between learning and change. Most OD involves change, and most change involves learning. Think about a change you made in your life, such as switching jobs, starting a relationship, moving to a new city, or pursuing a goal. Chances are these shifts created new learning. Changes often require new action or new thinking that depends on new learning. For example, when you switch jobs, you have to learn how to navigate relationships and how to interact with your new colleagues. This might involve learning how your new boss likes to receive information and make decisions, and then changing your behavior to accommodate the preferences of your boss. Working with a new team might involve learning how to be more assertive than you have been in the past if you are working with strong personalities, or the team is looking to you for the expertise you bring to the organization. Similarly, changes made in OD, such as heightened awareness of interpersonal relations, understanding through feedback, or attempting to change your leadership style, also involve learning. Certain conditions promote learning. For example, adults are motivated to learn when education is relevant to their current situation, work challenges, or life needs. Facilitating client learning. Knowles in 1980 and Knowles and Associates in 1984 developed key principles related to adult learning that are relevant to implementing change. These principles are considered the art and practice of teaching adults, also known as andragogy. Principles of andragogy as they relate to implementing change include the following. Number one, as people mature, their self-concept moves from that of a dependent personality toward one of a self-directed human being. This means that people desire to have say and control in their learning. Building ways for affected employees to have input into the change and control over aspects of it will enhance buy-in and adoption. For example, if you implement a new procedure, engage the people handling the process in devising best practices. Number two, people accumulate a growing reservoir of experience, which is a resource for learning. The people affected by a change have spent a great deal of time in the organization and have a repertoire of know-how related to the problem or issue being addressed by OD. Failure to tap their experience and knowledge will breed resentment and resistance. Find ways for the involved parties to contribute their insights to the process to enhance buy-in and minimize resistance. Number three, people become ready to learn when the tasks and challenges of life demand new knowledge. My organization, for example, is converting to a much-needed data management system. Although it is a major change, the employees who have been wrestling with outdated, unresponsive, clunky databases have eagerly attended training and are excited about the implementation of the new technology. When change is communicated well and addresses a true need in the organization, there is a better chance that employees will be enthusiastic about learning to adopt it. Number four. People tend to be life or problem-centered in their learning, rather than subject-centered. It is likely that many people did not have any interest in birthing classes until they were expecting a baby. That is because the learning was timely and relevant to their life. Similarly, someone would likely be more motivated to take a wine-tasting class, life-centered, than an organic chemistry class, subject-centered. Changes that are relevant to employees become learning opportunities. Part of a consultant's role is to effectively communicate the relevance of planned change and help those affected see the linkage. Number five, people are driven by intrinsic motivation. People are more inclined to seek learning that meets an internal need for knowledge or mastery rather than an external need for recognition or money. Number six, people need to know the reason to learn something. People will be resistant to learning new software or changing their behavior if they are not provided with a rationale. A consultant's job may well be to sell the OD effort and connect it with the necessary learning. When my organization announced the shift to a new database, the rationale was for ease of generating reports, combination of databases, and a user-friendly format. These were reasons that made sense to the users and motivated their acceptance of and learning related to the change. Consider this. Think of the times you have been motivated to learn. How do the principles of learning relate to your own life? What about to changes you have experienced at work? How can you craft the change in a way that gives affected employees an opportunity for input and control over the learning? Facilitating transformation through learning. Sharmer and Senge in 2016 proposed Theory U, a theory of learning and management that helps leaders change unproductive patterns of behavior that hurt relationships and decision-making. Recently, Sharmer in 2018 published a distillation of this model that uses action research to address learning and leadership challenges in organizations. Sharmer and Coffer in 2013 distinguished two types of learning in the Theory U model: learning from the past and learning from the emerging future. They describe this new model of learning and leadership extensively in their model of Theory U, a framework for learning, leading, innovating, and profound systemic renewal. Credit page 18. The model is called Theory U because of its U shape, illustrated in figure 5.1 in your ebook. Sharmer and Coffer proposed that energy follows attention, and that we should therefore focus on what we want to create versus what we want to avoid. That means consultants need to keep clients focused on the outcomes they seek rather than the problems they want to avoid. To understand this model of learning and change, start at the top left of the U. Moving down the left side of the U involves opening minds, hearts, and wills. You can help clients do this by observing them closely for ideas or practices that are holding them back, then feeding this information back to them. The bottom of the U is a place of deep reflection and shifting away from the problem toward the desired future. Your role is to create activities that help clients reflect on their problem. This might include key assumptions of individuals and the organization, or raise new questions that have not yet been asked. Going up the right side of the U involves acting, much like the doing phase of action research. In these steps, you develop a vision of the intended future and devise and implement appropriate interventions. Navigating change in the Theory U model requires what Sharmer and Coffer refer to as transforming the three enemies. Credit page 23. These are the voice of doubt and judgment, shutting down the open mind, the voice of cynicism, shutting down the open heart, and the voice of fear, shutting down the open will. Sharmer and Coffer suggested beginning by focusing on the future and paying particular attention to where the past seems to end. This place is similar to what Bridges in 1980 called the neutral zone. Refer to Chapter 2. Theory U is an innovative, future-oriented change model worth knowing. Resources for further study of this model are listed at the end of the chapter. Section 5.4, Monitoring and Sustaining Change. A vast amount of planning and work goes into making an intervention. As previously noted, making change is easier than sustaining change. A consultant's job is to keep the client on track to successful change implementation. This requires knowing the warning signs of a faltering intervention and how to get the client back on track to a successful, sustained intervention. Case study: Reorganization Resistance. The CEO of a publishing company instructs Brenda Frank, the president of one of its divisions, to reorganize its management structure. The division was recently purchased and is not aligned with the other divisions. The CEO thinks that the division has too many vice presidents and management layers, and that its administrative structure is too expensive. Brenda is unconvinced that restructuring is the best answer, due to the niche of the publishing division. But she also understands her marching orders. She contacts a consultant, George Reed, with whom she has worked before on leadership development issues. "George," she says, "I've got to find a way to reorganize that makes my CEO happy. According to corporate, we have too many layers and too many VPs. I'm going to need your help to figure this out. Can you help?" George pauses for a moment before answering. He is an expert at leadership, but has limited experience with the kind of restructuring Brenda is asking for. "I'm not sure that falls within my expertise, Brenda, but I am willing to hear more about the matter. Let's meet." A meeting is set, and George and Brenda discuss the change. George is hesitant and tells Brenda she might be better off with someone else. "Nonsense," she exclaims. "You are an expert at leadership. How hard can this be? Let's get to work. Brenda and George set about planning the change. The next thing Brenda and George do is call a meeting of the vice presidents to notify them of the change. Brenda opens the meeting. "We are going to have to reorganize," she says. "According to corporate, we have too many layers and too many VPs. I'm asking for your help in this process." Brenda explains that over the coming weeks, George will be meeting with them to discuss their functional areas and collect data to help inform the change. After the meeting, the groans and complaints from the VPs are largely uniform. The comments in the hallway range from anger to disbelief to denial. "I'll tell you what, we are not at all valued. This is a signal we better all be dusting off our resumes." "Well, that's the dumbest idea I've heard out of corporate since we were acquired. They have no idea what it takes to run our business and have given no rationale for the change other than they think it will save money. What about the money it could lose?" "This plan will never work. Let's just keep our noses to the grindstone and ride it out." George and Brenda have a good working relationship, so they forge ahead and try to make the best of a difficult situation. George begins studying the organization chart and interviewing the VPs. Together, they come up with a new structure that merges 10 departments into 6, displacing 4 VPs. The rollout of the change involves holding individual meetings with the VPs to unveil the new structure. Brenda works hard to find new roles within the company for the displaced VPs, but she is not entirely successful and winds up laying off 2 of them. Once the personnel changes have been made at the individual VP level, Brenda crafts an email to all employees with the new organization chart and informs them that the changes are effective immediately. The reorganization announcement throws the organization into a frenzy. It catches the employees by surprise. They see no reason for the changes. Immediate reactions are anger, fear, and suspicion. Employees are nervous about their job security and the integrity of their work units. The remaining VPs are unclear about how to implement the changes or how to manage the new staff units of the merged departments. Productivity and morale plummet. Several employees at multiple levels begin to look for other jobs. Customers begin to complain about a lack of support or clarity about whom to contact to meet their needs. Clearly, Brenda and George have a disaster on their hands. They thought they were doing things right, but obviously, they were not. Critical thinking questions. Number 1, what did Brenda and George do wrong? Number 2, what would you do differently? Reasons interventions fail. Perhaps your organization has experienced interventions, such as training, survey feedback, or restructuring. Can you think of interventions that failed? This section examines reasons interventions fail and the implications of such failures. Interventions fail for several reasons. First, organizations must be ready for change. In addition, certain flaws inherent in the intervention design itself can contribute to failure. Anderson in 2016 identified 10 reasons interventions fail. They are listed in Table 5.7 in your ebook, along with tips for fixing intervention failures. Failed interventions have serious implications for the consultant and the organization. Credit Anderson, 2016. They can damage a consultant's reputation, causing the consultant to lose clients and future referrals. Failed interventions can also be detrimental to a consultant's sense of self-efficacy and trust in his or her intuition. This same level of self-doubt can plague organizations with failed OD efforts and may cause organization members to distrust their own intuition about organization problems or ability to implement lasting change. In fact, failure can become a repetitive cycle for consultants and organizations if confidence in the process is not quickly restored. Argyris in 1970 noted that other implications for failed interventions on the organization level include increased defensiveness against any change, diminished ability to cope through conflict resolution and productive communications, waning energy to work on solving the problem, increased frustration, stress, cynicism, and controlling behaviors, and unrealistic goals, aiming too high or too low to avoid future risk or failure. Overcoming resistance. A lesser-known definition of change readiness is the cognitive precursor to the behaviors of either resistance to or support for a change effort. Credit Armanakis, Harris, and Mossholder, 1993, pages 681 through 682. When employees express stress, negativity, or cynicism toward the change, they are showing resistance. Resistance has also been defined as an adherence to any attitudes or behaviors that thwart organizational change goals. Credit Chawla and Kellaway, 2004, page 485. Resistance behaviors might be readily visible, such as sabotage or vocal opposition, or they may be subtler, such as reducing output or withholding information. Credit Giangreco and Pecci, 2005. Resistance may also take the form of ridiculing the change, boycotting change conversations, or sabotage. Credit Lines, 2005. The beginning of this chapter discussed readiness to change. Readiness is related to resistance because when people or organizations are not prepared to change, they will likely find ways to stall or distract the change effort. Use the assessment in your ebook to find out how much you embrace change. Causes of resistance. Resistance to change might be caused by management's dismissal of employee input or failure to handle negative attitudes toward the change. Or it might arise because the level of employee input in planning, implementation, and change maintenance is too low. Credit McKay et al., 2013. Most people do not like change, so resistance is the general disposition most will initially experience. Resistance can also occur on ethical and strategic grounds if employees do not regard the change as favorable to the organization and its stakeholders. Credit Oreg, 2006. Pitterit, 2000. Acknowledging resistance. Management may be tempted to disregard resistance. However, it is a mistake to ignore it. When employees resist change and relay concerns about it, they are behaving normally. Impending change causes fear and a sense of personal loss and grief among employees who find value and a sense of security in their daily routine and workgroup. Credit Burke, Lake, and Payne, 2008. Sometimes, employees just need an opportunity to raise issues and have management hear their fears. Dismissing employees' concerns or disregarding how the change will affect employees' sense of security and trust in the organization risks intensifying negative attitudes, increasing resistance behaviors, and compromising effective change implementation. Instead, it is to the organization's advantage to create opportunities for dialogue about the change and to seek solutions that resolve the concerns. How leaders talk about change also matters. Chung, Judge, and Holbeach in 2015 suggested talking about change in a less directive and more inclusive way. Table 5.8 in your ebook shows the differences. Tips and wisdom. Discussing change. A simple exercise to help employees discuss change is to give them an opportunity to talk about their hopes for the change as well as their fears about the change. It is useful to record these, often on a flip chart or whiteboard, and for management to respond to the fears, which helps diffuse them. This activity can be done in a meeting format or via an electronic forum or survey. Ethical issues pertaining to interventions. Integrity and authenticity help the OD process run smoothly and avoid failed interventions. OD ethics have also been discussed in chapters 1 and 3. There are some important principles to keep in mind to ensure that the intervention process is ethical. Avoid misrepresentation. Although it is tempting to avoid telling clients what they do not want to hear, it is a mistake to misrepresent the intervention's timeline, cost, or difficulty. This mistake can occur due to inexperience, overpromising, or trying to please a client. A better strategy is to underpromise and overdeliver. That way, there are no surprises in the long run. It is also important that you know the limits of your skill set as a consultant. If you promise to deliver a skill or knowledge you do not have, it can create distrust and anger with the client. put the intervention in danger of failure and imperil your reputation as a consultant. Avoid collusion. Colluding with a client is another ethical challenge. For example, you might scheme to adopt an intervention because it is appealing or interesting, or because it will bring you more business as a consultant. If you lack evidence to support the need and appropriateness of an intervention, it is unethical to recommend it. It is also bad ethics to conspire with the client in ways that result in distortion of the process and exclusion of others. For example, if you know that a certain manager is going to disagree with your desired course of action, and you exclude him or her from a meeting where it is discussed, this is considered colluding to exclude. Avoid coercion or manipulation. Finally, it is unethical to coerce or manipulate the client or members of the organization. This might involve blocking opportunities for organization members to participate in the decisions about the process, which, in effect, foists the intervention on them. This and other ethical challenges noted can be avoided by following a good action research process that generates data on which to base decisions while actively involving organization stakeholders in the process. Sustaining change. Whether the change has been on an individual, group, or organization level, implementing it is the easy part. Sustaining it is where trouble occurs. Successful change implementation may cause overconfidence, which fosters an unpreparedness for the difficult work of maintaining it. Credit Anderson, 2016, Senji et al., 1999. Anderson cautioned that relapsing to old ways of being is an implementation hazard, especially when an external consultant exits the picture. Change also requires energy that organization members may lack, because other distractions may pull them away from consciously maintaining the change. The education necessary for full change adoption may not keep pace with the change implementation, making it difficult to sustain. Sometimes the old organization culture and practices are just too powerful for the change to sway, leaving the organization vulnerable to reverting to old ways of doing business. Actions to sustain change. How can organizations avoid these pitfalls to lasting change? Change should be translated into the organization's daily operations, so it simply becomes the way business is done. Strategies that help sustain change include the following. Number one, communicate regularly about the change implementation. This could be via regular meetings, written or electronic communication, social media, and informal conversations. Number two, formulate an implementation task force that includes top leaders and affected employees. This group can hold regular meetings and help communicate the change. Number three, hold meetings that include a cross-functional, intra-group mixture of people involved with the change to monitor progress, troubleshoot, and evaluate the process. Number four, find ways to reward and recognize employees involved in the implementation. This might include visible items such as t-shirts or trinkets, awards, monetary rewards, or time off. Number five, build change implementation into the performance review criteria of those employees accountable for supporting and sustaining change. Number six, invite external stakeholders and consultants to evaluate the change progress. Number seven, ensure that the reward system is aligned with the desired changes. Number eight, provide the learning and development needed to sustain the change. And number nine, ensure that needed resources are available to sustain the change. Tips and wisdom: the challenge of change. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Frederick Douglass. Change is hard work. Well, implemented changes make tremendous differences for individuals, teams, and organizations. The OD and action research processes greatly enhance the probability of success in change endeavors. Strategies to diffuse challenges to change. During implementation, a consultant will monitor the client for signs of low commitment, such as anger, hostility, objections, inflexibility with implementation options, unwillingness to look at process issues, hidden agendas, delaying tactics, or failure to implement. To successfully make an intervention, there must be commitment and leadership from the top, individual competence, and adequate organization. When consultants observe signs of waning commitment, they will want to take action quickly. Faltering commitment will negatively affect learning and lasting change. Senji and colleagues in 1999 identified 10 challenges created by resistance to change that relate to initiating change, sustaining change momentum, and meeting the challenges of redesigning and rethinking processes and procedures during and after the change. Time challenges. Employees can feel frustration or worry that they do not have enough time to learn or implement changes. To counter this challenge requires giving employees flexibility and time to process and implement the change. Support and help with change implementation. Employees will become frustrated and disenchanted if coaching, guidance, and support are absent during the change. It is important to provide the resources both for supporting the change and for management to be skilled in this area. Perceptions that the change is not relevant. When employees do not see the rationale for change or its relation to the big picture or business reasons, they may ignore it because they think it does not matter. Establishing the need for and relevance of change is necessary from the beginning of the action research process. The need for change must be tied to business goals, new learning, changed procedures, and processes, so employees are not left wondering why they have to make changes. Management fails to set an example. When management fails to walk the talk, people notice. Management must be held accountable for visibly and personally supporting and implementing the change. Mounting fear and anxiety. When changes are implemented, employees can get nervous. They may feel vulnerable, unable to adopt the change, and distrustful of the change and management. Open and candid communication from the beginning is a must, along with management setting a good example. Perceptions that the change is not working as intended. Employees might be negative about the change and look for evidence that it is not working. This perception can serve as an excuse to return to the way things were. It is important to show how the change is resulting in progress and intended outcomes. If metrics are available, it is helpful to show that, since implementing the change, our defects have decreased by 10%, for example. Perceptions that the old way of doing things was better. These perceptions can allow employee groups to feel like victims who are disrespected or misunderstood by management. These perceptions are countered by ongoing, effective communication about the change and its need. Confusion about who is responsible for the change and new procedures. Change can naturally breed confusion over new procedures and policies. Management can help by modeling patience, flexibility, and problem-solving to create new infrastructure when making changes. Frustration that the organization is doing nothing but reinventing the wheel. Employees can get frustrated when they feel like no real change is occurring, or that the change has not improved the problem. Making the case for change early in the process can help minimize frustration and help people focus on the change's future benefits. Confusion about the purpose and benefit of the change in the bigger organization picture. Employees may not immediately link the change to organization strategy and purpose. Management can help by showing how the change will benefit the business and its stakeholders. As has been stressed throughout this chapter, key themes in avoiding resistance include timely and ample communication about the change, providing a clear rationale for why the change is needed, and management support and role modeling throughout the change process. Summary and resources. Chapter summary. Propensity to accept change depends on the level of change readiness for both individuals and the organization. Change readiness signals that employees perceive the change as necessary and attainable and are willing to support its implementation. Change readiness is influenced by clear management communication and employees' confidence in management's attitudes, knowledge, and skills to effectively implement the change. Interventions are more likely to be accepted when the change has been clearly communicated and employees have an opportunity to participate in its planning and implementation. OD interventions are change activities that help resolve the presenting problem. Interventions can be classified in multiple ways, including diagnostic, confrontive, level, or process. This book classifies them according to individual, group, or team, or organization level. The criteria for making an effective intervention include basing the intervention on valid data, verifying the client's free and informed choice to proceed, and establishing the client's commitment to learning and change. During the implementation, consultants should be clear about the type of consulting role they want to play. Roles vary from less involved observation of the implementation to active engagement in providing feedback, modifying the plan, and providing needed training and support. The role the consultant plays will depend on how skilled the client is at leading and facilitating change. It is important to promote learning related to the intervention by encouraging reflective practice, helping employees see the connection between learning and change, and facilitating client learning by building principles of andragogy, effective adult learning, into the intervention. Theory U embraces the idea that energy follows attention. In consulting, this means consultants need to keep clients focused on the outcomes they seek rather than the problems they want to avoid. Interventions fail for multiple reasons, including lack of change readiness, resistance, poor levels of management communication and support, and a flawed OD process that results in the wrong problem being solved, ambiguous goals, inadequate time being allotted, poor design, ineffective consulting, failure to ensure client accountability, and lack of organization commitment. Ethical issues abound in OD. During the intervention phase, such issues include misrepresentation, collusion, and coercion. Resistance to change can be overcome by open and regular communication from management that engages employees in the change's planning and implementation and acknowledges the fears and concerns that underlie resistance. Change can be sustained by regular communication, broad engagement of employees in monitoring the change, rewarding and recognizing employees who are committed to the change effort, and providing the necessary learning and support. For more exercises, resources, and citations, visit your ebook. End of Chapter 5, Part B.